Yeah, you ready to just jump right into it?
Let's swing into it.
Okay. Welcome to the Government. I'm Alex.
Already having fun.
Yeah, I'm Alex, and the guy with all the puns is James.
That's me.
Yeah, before we get into our actual discussion of the movie we're going to be talking about, just want to get everybody to check out our website, themcgovernment.com. We have more content up there. Like, we've got audio, video podcasts. Last week we did a video podcast on The Social Network. We did an audio podcast on the first four seasons of Breaking Bad. So you should check that out. We also write pop culture criticism, which you can check out there as well. TheMcGuffinMen.com. Also follow us on Twitter at TheMcGuffinMen. All one word, no underscores. McGuffin spelled MacGuffin. GUFFIN. Is there anything I forgot, James?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I did forget to give us reviews on iTunes, please. We appreciate it. Let's get right to the theme song, shall we?
Yeah. Theme song, yeah.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by the amazing Spider-Man. I heard Andrew Garfield bulked up for the role by eating all of John Arbuckle's lasagna. And now, here are Alex and James.
And here we are, back from the theme song.
It seems so short when you listen to it like that.
I know. It's almost like we don't play the theme song and just add it in later in editing.
Something like that.
Yeah. So what's up? Yeah, I'm born ready.
You ready to talk about The Amazing Spider-Man?
Absolutely.
That's not my review of it. That's actually the title of the movie.
Yeah, I know. I'm aware of that.
Here's my question. Why is it called The Amazing Spider-Man?
Because Spider-Man was already taken.
That's all, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this seems like they weren't even going for amazing at all. Like, not to say that it's just really bad, but there are a few moments of amazement I found.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I mean, if you think objectively about what Spider-Man is doing, it's all pretty amazing.
I guess so.
I think if you see this as a document of fact, then it's pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, Spider-Man's existence is pretty amazing.
Yeah, exactly. You just have to view it as reality, and then it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, just compared to the other one, like the other Spider-Mans, the Raimi Spider-Mans.
Yeah.
Those seem to be going for more of the amazing, spectacular. This seems like it's trying to be more grounded and, you know, relatable.
Yeah. I mean, the other ones were goofier a little bit. Like, the Sam Raimi ones were goofier. I don't think they were necessarily less grounded. I don't know. How do you mean? How do you mean that?
Well, I think, you know, what everyone's talking about, this one being directed by Mark Webb, who was hired solely for the pun of his last name.
Absolutely. And, like, the last shot of the movie of Spider-Man shooting Webb at the credits and then directed by Mark Webb.
No, I mean, but everyone knows him from 500 Days of Summer. And
yes, everybody knows him.
Everybody.
My mom was like, when is the new film by Mark Webb coming out? When can I see this cinema?
The mega blockbuster 500 Days of Summer.
Which we talked about on an earlier video podcast. Another reason to check out our website. Anyways, continue, James.
Plugs.
Yeah.
As I was saying, it's the guy who did 500 Days of Summer, which was a very, you know, relationship-y personal movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think they kind of wanted him to bring a bit of that to this movie. Or if they didn't, he did it anyway.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is more, you know, I think more personal and grounded than some of the other Spideys. And yeah, I guess that's where I was coming from with it.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I think as far as like the romantic leads, I feel like have more chemistry in this movie than Kirsten Dunst and Tobey Maguire ever had.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with that.
But, yeah. So you're happy with Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone?
I loved Andrew Garfield in this. I didn't think Emma Stone had enough to do. Like, there's only really one scene where she gets to flex her muscles, and that's her scene with Dennis Leary in the hallway.
I was pretty sure you'd be a fan of that.
Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah, no, she is very funny at that part. And yeah, she really doesn't have a lot of screen time in this. And
I was
being quiet, hiding in the closet.
Yeah.
You know, I think they knew, I mean, I think they knew they had something good on their hands. Everyone knows Emma Stone's really funny and adorable and lovable.
Yeah, super lovable, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, so yeah, it was a bummer that there wasn't more of her. I too completely enjoyed Andrew Garfield in this.
He's so good.
Yeah, I wanted to like him and I thought I would, but he went above and beyond and I'm very happy about it.
The thing that I thought was so incredible about his performance is like he's 29.
Yeah.
And I totally bought him as a teenager. Like he looks like a teenager to me in this movie. And I just thought that was so awesome. Oh, I'm sorry. He's 28. He'll be 29 in August. But yeah, no, I just totally bought it. And they cast somebody who is adequately scrawny. And just, I don't know, the way he sold everything about teenagerness to me, I thought was really great.
Yeah.
And he was just so likable. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Even when he's being a dick, he's still likable. I don't know. No, I really liked Peter Parker a lot.
And like the first 10 minutes of the movie, like after we get past that stuff with his parents and we get him in high school for the first time, I got really excited thinking it was just going to be a teen movie, which is really what I was hoping for. But like those first couple scenes in high school, I was like, no way they're doing this. This will be the best.
Well, yeah, I guess we'll probably get into it more later, but I think that's what they did right for most of this movie.
Yeah.
Is all that stuff. And I think where they missed the mark is where they depart from that. And obviously they had to depart from that. And I think that most people in the world other than you would have hated to see just a teen movie with Peter Parker in it.
I would have been so fine with it. Like, just that, you know, he fights regular criminals at night, you know, and otherwise it's a teen movie. I'm totally fine with that. Like, I don't need a supervillain, you know?
Yeah. So you... Some people don't like the whole skateboarding angle. Is this okay with you?
I was fine with it. You know, I guess my question about this movie, my big question, is when does this movie take place? Because I'm pretty sure it's like 2002 in the world of this movie.
Why?
Like he's into skateboarding. He's not using Google as his primary search engine. he's montaging during Coldplay songs, and Emma Stone keeps talking about Benzino. It's all very confusing. I'm pretty sure this movie takes place in 2002.
Okay, there's a couple things you got wrong there.
No, but I think the thing that makes this movie just unrealistic is that he uses Bing, which just never happens, ever. That just takes me right out of a movie. I think that happened. I think Ryan Reynolds uses Bing in Safe House, and I was like, no. Nobody does this.
Lizard Man hybrid, fine. Binging something, no.
Well, see, that's the thing, because like we're in a world where that's accepted, although I guess we could say the same about we're in a world where Bing is the primary search engine.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't buy that for a second.
It's so bad that was one of the things that took me out of this movie.
And I'm sure everybody thinks that. It's like, yeah, I'll Bing it. No, you never will. And like Peter Parker isn't an idiot who's just using the internet for the first time. Like, oh, maybe I'll try web crawler, you know? Like,
no, he knows how PageRank works. Yeah. Don't lie to me.
God. Just upsetting.
Did you think he was too much of a dick?
No. How so?
I don't know. I don't know. Some people are having some backlash to Peter Parker. I guess a bit of a departure from the source material.
Okay.
I guess, you know, skateboarding. Oh, he still uses his film camera.
Yes. That's another thing that was early 2000s to me that I forgot to write
down.
I
thought you were going to mention that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some people said he was a little too emo and it's not, you know, as bad as Spider-Man 3 emo because that was just way too much.
Yeah.
But they said, you know, he's not supposed to be a skating emo kid. He's supposed to be more of a nerdy kid.
Fuck, another thing from the early 2000s. He's really into the And One mixtapes.
Yeah. Okay, but that scene was awesome. I was such a big fan of that scene.
It was so awesome until he starts running. Like, when he's just in one place, I was fine with it. I was like, this is kind of funny, and this is adding to my early 2000s theory. But, when he just bowls over Flash, travels all over the place, and then jams on him. So goofy. But, yeah, anyways. Sorry, what were we talking about?
Him being an emo skater.
Yeah, I don't think he's...
Nerdy nerd.
he's not emo as much as he's just emotional, you know?
That's where the word emo comes from.
Yeah, no, exactly. But I mean, when someone says emo, you know, you're thinking of a big Dashboard Confessional fan, not unlike the theme song from Spider-Man 2, and somebody that, you know, wears thick glasses, which Peter Parker does less in this movie than any other Spider-Man movie, I would think. And although I guess the Tobey Maguire one stops wearing them as well. But yeah, no, there's no emo swoop. He's got big Edward Cullen hair, but he doesn't have, I don't know. I don't see emo. I see a teenager who's in touch with his emotions, you know, just cause he cries doesn't mean he's emo.
Okay. Yeah. He does.
Yeah.
I saw it. I think it was Mark Webb actually talking about this. And he said that, nerds kind of occupy a different place in society compared to when Spider-Man would have came out.
Yep.
Originally, like the comic books. And you know, nerd is cool now. Like nerd to be really nerdy is, you know, popular and mainstream. And so I think they kind of had to make him a bit, you know, alternative to avoid being part of that, you know, central group.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that statement that, being nerd is kind of more accepted now. Like, I like that he's friends with Flash Thompson, you know, eventually, because that's sort of my high school experience, you know. Like, I feel like when we were in high school, that sort of started to change. If you weren't like cripplingly nerdy, it sort of became, I don't know, less like the older stereotypical mold, you know.
Yeah,
like people that know how to use computers can help the popular people that don't know how to use computers, and then
yeah,
friendship.
Yeah. That was a nice scene though when after Uncle Ben dies.
Yeah, and Flash comes up to him.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I agree. One thing I enjoyed about Flash is like I was just on IMDb, and you know the front page just has pictures up sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes if I just see one, I'll just click on it. And there was one of that actor, and I didn't know who he was. And I was just like, I saw his jaw, and I was like, that guy should be Flash Thompson in the Spider-Man movie. And then it was.
Oh, that guy has another funny credit that you'd enjoy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, keep going with your next point. I'll look it up.
His name's like Dan Zilka.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds right, actually.
Yeah. Oh, definitely Zilka. Dan might be wrong.
Okay.
I'm just going to take a moment to formulate this point properly while you research.
Okay, it's Chris Zilka, and he is also in Piranha 3DD, Shark Knight 3D, Papers, My Super Psycho Sweet 16 Part 2.
Maybe look him up on Wikipedia. I thought
10 Things I Hate About You, the TV series.
Yes, he's Joey Donner. He's Joey Donner. For 16 episodes.
Oh my god. So that explains all the witty repartee that happens in exactly. The Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay. yeah, well, just to get back to Peter's personality a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you think they made him sort of, and I this kind of goes back to the evolving definition of nerd and, you know, the bottom of the social ladder. Do you think that this Peter was more of an intentional outsider instead of someone who doesn't get accepted despite his best efforts? Like,
yes.
He kind of puts himself on the outside and, instead of, you know, wanting to be with the cool kids and always being rejected.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that a lot.
Yeah, no, me too.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's just, like, he doesn't have any friends. We don't see him with a single friend in the movie that, you know, we don't get it. Other than, you know, Flash and him don't like each other at the beginning, or you know, Flash doesn't like that he's standing up, Parker's standing up to him, and then they're friends eventually. And then Gwen. And that's it. Those are all the only teenagers we see him talk to, except for the girl painting the banner, I guess. But it's never really implied that they're friends other than, you know, he's just sticking up for him.
Yeah, yeah. For him. Yeah. Yeah, no, I liked him as kind of that kind of more intentional outsider.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I think that was, it kind of gets to more of him, you know, not wanting to be accepted, but, you know, having a very clear distinction from those other people, not always just on their terms, but on his.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
And you think they made him not quite modern enough? A little too early 2000s?
Well,
you?
He does have really skinny jeans, so,
yeah.
You know,
I don't actually believe this movie is supposed to take place in the early 2000s, but it's there are so many things that are really oddly early 2000s to me. But I don't know. I thought he was adequately modern. Yeah.
Well, he talked to people with one earbud in, so
I thought that was kind of funny.
Just like those damn kids these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw a cool.
I definitely did that as a teenager, though. So.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have been your friend.
Not week. Constantly, but, you know, I've done it on more than one occasion.
Yeah. Well, I was reading up on kind of the production of this movie, and I saw a nice little quote about Peter kind of being more modern. Now, they didn't, put it in those terms, but, that's certainly what I got from it. And it was Andrew Garfield talking about Peter, you know, behind the mask. So when Peter is dressed up and he's kind of got that power of being anonymous mm-hmm. to him.
Yep.
And you know how he's, a lot more witty and more of an ass.
Yeah. He's so funny.
Yeah.
Times.
And I mean, that's not just this Spider-Man. That's been
That's more, that's one thing they never got that I always loved about Spider-Man and the Raimi ones is like they had him talking during fight scenes, like Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man, but he was never legitimately funny, which
he had the lines that were supposed to be funny, but
they weren't particularly funny, and Tobey Maguire doesn't have great comic timing, you know, whereas Andrew Garfield totally has both of those things, you know, particularly when he arrests the, or I guess captures the guy that murdered Uncle Ben, that seems so funny.
Is that when he says, it's this web. I developed it myself.
Yeah.
That part made me laugh really hard.
There are, like, every joke he says in that scene is funny. And not just, like, you know, like, little chuckle, but, like, funny laugh, you know? And there's,
like,
and when he's
like, being funny.
Yeah, and when he hits the guy in the balls with the webbing, it, like, does a spin. It's really funny. But anyway.
Anyway, the quote about, Peter asked Spider-Man wearing the full costume of it, said, "You feel the power of it, the power of not being seen, the power of the mask. Peter becomes witty when he's got that protective layer. It's like he's on a message board. He's got the anonymity of the internet within that suit, and he can say whatever the hell he likes, and he can get away with anything."
Yeah. That's a little bit of a stretch, but yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was a nice, modern take on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It seems like your kind of superhero that, you know, would play games on his cell phone while waiting for the bad guy to meet up with him.
Yeah, exactly. But then I guess the question is, how does Andrew Garfield explain how fucking often he takes off the mask?
Yeah, true.
It's like he has the anonymity behind the mask, but he doesn't want it.
Yeah, and, you know, leaves homemade labels on his camera that he uses in Grand Theft
Auto. I know, that's so bad.
Yeah, I really, really didn't like that part.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Emma a little more?
Yeah, sure. Love her.
Yeah, that's all you got. Hey?
Oh, I've got plenty. I've got a 5-volume set, but
okay.
Emma Stone. I like Emma Stone.
Yeah.
As do you, I take it?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. What else have you seen her in other than SNL, I guess?
Superbad.
Okay, fair enough. I find she's totally unmemorable in Superbad.
Yeah, no, I totally forgot about her, too. Yeah. I feel like something else, but definitely not a lot.
Because you never saw Easy A, right?
No.
And that's the Emma Stone movie.
Yeah, so. That's what I hear.
It's wonderful. But anyways, I'm probably going to watch it tonight after I edit these podcasts. Because that's all I wanted to do while watching Spider-Man was watching Easy A. I was like, she has such a bigger role in Easy A. Why can't I just be watching that? Anyways.
Can't you just have a glass of cocoa with her on the plate?
Because it's fattening.
I like how, you know, this version of Peter and Gwen actually seem like a couple, and not just that they have, you know, on screen chemistry or whatever, but with Toby and Kirsten Dunst, not their performances, but just the writing of their versions of it, it was just kind of Peter really likes this girl and has doted on her for a long time. And she just finally learns that. It's like, oh, he must be great if he's so into me.
Yeah, no, for sure.
These two, you know, they both are really into science and have similar interests and personalities and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's not just the acting, but that seemed to be, you know, more
a decision made in writing that seems smart.
That should be very obvious.
Yeah. One thing I didn't like, I felt like they need another scene or two of build up to them just being hopelessly in love. You know what I mean? It's like he stops Flash from bullying that kid, and then she likes that, and then they talk a little bit, and then they have that one scene in the hallway, which is super adorable, where they're like, do you want to do that thing? And she says, either of those options works or whatever, which is a really great scene.
Yeah.
And I feel like if I could watch only one scene from this movie again, it would be that. But it's like dinner with the parents, you know, like it just moves too quick for me.
Yeah. Who could fall in love with Emma Stone that quickly, right?
Well, but I think like one of the problems of this movie is that there's just so much crammed in that almost none of it like fully works. And I feel like that's a problem with most of the things the movie tries to get across. There are just so many ideas that are interesting, but like you need to take like three of them away to make five of them, you know, full ideas. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I feel like it's so much like the first Spider-Man that was 15 minutes shorter than this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it just seems still scattered. And I don't know what more they crammed in the first Spider-Man, except maybe Peter's parents and that whole thing.
See, that's what they should have done more of.
I think that's what this movie kind of promised. It was like, this is the untold story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the trailers, all we can really tell you is that, it's going to be like the first one, but it's going to peel back one more layer and have that thing you never knew about Peter Parker. And I guess it's the parents, and I guess we're expected to wait for the next two movies to really get to that.
Yeah.
But no, I think that was the only thing that I thought was in this movie that wasn't in the first Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I still feel this was as an end product. Really jumbled, really scattered, really choppy, a bunch of stuff not really developed, and a couple of bright spots, mostly the non-superhero-y kind of stuff.
Yep, absolutely.
The bright spots.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and see, going into the movie, I honestly did not expect for a second that Uncle Ben would die in this movie.
Oh, no?
I was, like, convinced. Like, because I feel like that when that happened, I was like, really? Because now this is the same. Like, and particularly with when they cast Gwen Stacy, because I know, or at least a comic that I knew very well growing up, being that I actually read a lot of Spider-Man when I was a kid. He was my superhero until Batman Begins came out, basically. And there's a comic that I read a bunch of times as a kid, and I think still have, kicking around my apartment, where Captain Stacy dies. And I was just like, okay, now that Gwen Stacy's in it, they're going to do, you know, Dennis Leary as Captain Stacy will be the father figure, and he'll probably die, and Uncle Ben won't die. Because they'll just do it without him dying. And they'll focus more on, you know, the parent stuff, which was evident from the first trailer. And and then Gwen's dad will be the death that has weight. But the way they do it, they put the two deaths in. You've got Uncle Ben maybe 40 minutes into the movie, and then Captain Stacy later on, towards like right at the end, and neither of them has weight because of that. You know?
Yeah.
And that really, I was really pissed off when Uncle Ben died. I thought like that was the thing that could have made it a departure. And when they were like, oh yeah, Emma Stone's Gwen Stacy, I was like, oh, that's smart, you know? And then they just did the same thing.
Yeah, no, and this movie follows so many of the beats of the first Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And it's when, I mean, the beginning of every movie, you're kind of going to follow the same beats, especially with, you know, doing two origin stories. You know, you're going to have a bunch of similarities. But yeah, it was Uncle Ben's death, you know, slightly different than how it is in the first Spider-Man. Yeah. You know, he's just as guilty, but not really guilty, but lets it happen. And then he gets shot when he wasn't supposed to get shot. And then,
yeah, like Spidey, this is
looking for him.
Yeah. This is a remake with slight changes. It's not a reboot. Like, I'm not entirely comfortable calling this a full reboot. And the thing that really pissed me off, like when I was watching the credits after the movie, is that's when I realized, oh, this is co-written and produced by the same people that did the other Spider-Mans, the same producers and same writers.
The same people involved.
Right, like, it's just, if you're going to reboot the movie, fucking reboot the movie, you know, like, because it's not, like, this isn't something, origin stories can be retold in comics, it happens all the time, and you take some elements of it and keep it going, and that's the model that they should be for all these film reboots, because this is a precedent setter. This is going to happen so many more times. This sort of like quick turnaround, you know, and like next is going to be Batman. And then I think they said they'll continue Iron Man with a different person playing Iron Man. But, you know, when depending on how all those other Marvel movies get to at the end of, you know, three movies, this is going to start happening a lot more. And like, I'm really concerned we're not going to get a, you know, change to the movies. And I don't know. It's really worrying to me as somebody that likes these types of movies. And also likes watching new versions of these types of movies.
Yeah, and I think that has kind of been the appeal of comic books even before comic book movies, is that we always have the same character. And you can have a very different origin story, you know, a very different, you know, a lot of, you know, parts of this guy's life, yet they're all still the same character. Like, somewhere in the milieu, it's still this one guy. Yeah. And it's still all canon, even when they are, you know, slightly different, down to the point of being completely contradictory.
Yeah.
And I think you're right that if you're just going to remake it, that really takes a lot of the fun out of it. And for me, I was just thinking, and especially because this movie is, you know, not as teen movie as you wanted, but still is kind of...
Well, very few movies are as teen movie as I wanted. I feel like The Dark Knight Rises won't be as teen movie as I want it to be either.
Yeah, but because this is kind of such a teen movie, and, you know, being a blockbuster, you're going to want to get, you know, the teenage crowd into it. It just seemed like, let's do a movie for the 15 to 22-year-olds every 10 years, even if it's the same movie.
See, and here's the thing. I feel like this movie is more pointedly aimed at people younger than us than the first Spider-Man movie was. This movie, I thought it was really interesting in how this seems to be sort of the first blockbuster I was actually like legitimately interested in that is directly aimed at people younger than me. Because you and I are still in a very, you know, marketable group. Like, people like us at our age spend money on these things. And I thought it was kind of interesting that they aimed directly for the Twilight crowd. And like, just looking, both times I've seen this movie, there have been a lot of kids in the audience. And by kids, I mean, you know, 13 to like 16, 17 year olds. And they love this movie. And like, looking on Twitter, young people love this movie, people younger than us. And I find that really interesting because, I mean, it clearly paid off. But I don't know. I don't know what that means, but I just wish they changed it more, because it's not like if they changed it more, people would be upset, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think people would be upset if Uncle Ben didn't die, because you could still have motivation easily. Like, even unchanged, Captain Stacy's death, what he says and all that stuff, I feel like gives a really interesting motivation for Spider-Man, and would have totally worked if they didn't, you know, punk out. And I think even just with the stuff with his parents, having both his uncle and aunt still around is fine.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that you don't need Uncle Ben's death to spur this Spider-Man into action, because he, and one thing that I liked about this movie, is responsible for the lizard.
Yeah.
You know, it was him, you know, he brought his dad's work to him and all that. Like, so he has the motivation to stop the lizard, even just beyond, oh, I have power and I could stop people from dying.
Yeah.
This is totally on his conscience, because he knows that this wouldn't be happening without him. That's enough to get him in there without Uncle Ben. And then when you get the first death of someone close to him, well, not that close to him, obviously, but Captain Stacy at the end, that has that real weight to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you've still got the search for a father figure with his parents being disappeared or going away, and like, and him saying to Uncle Ben that, you know, I mean, he's a good father, but he's not his father, you know, and he's still sort of, I don't know, there's still that search for a father that doesn't change just because Uncle Ben dies. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about the lizard.
Okay. Are we going to talk about how he looked like one of the Koopa Troopas from the Super Mario Brothers movie? What was that?
I can take it you didn't think he looked very good.
Oh my God, ludicrous.
Yeah, not very good. Eh?
Jesus, he looked so bad.
Yep.
So bad.
Yeah, like from a not everything was bad. I thought from a distance and when he was moving and running, like that kind of stuff wasn't way off.
Yeah.
Like the idea of the person hybrid thing, I think could have been done well, and from far away it looks okay.
Yep.
But it's just the face.
Just stop it. Just stop it with that face stuff.
Yeah. I thought the mouth looked a bit like Joker's mouth.
Yeah, a little bit of that for sure.
And Koopa Troopa and
It also looked like bad.
I meant bad. Yeah. It looks like those two things had a kid with bad.
Yeah, like it looked kind of like the jacket Michael Jackson was wearing on the cover of Bad, but green.
It's scaly. Yeah.
No, I'm pretty sure that jacket had scales.
Somewhere. Yeah, and I think visually, no on the lizard. it's motivation. Execution.
Like, I was so bored every time he was on screen. I did not care about
everything about the lizard really missed. And I didn't think right away, like when it was Dr. Connors and stuff, I didn't hate it right away. But when it really starts getting going as the lizard, yeah, like everything about that really, really missed to me.
Yep. Didn't care.
Explain his plan to me and why he's doing it.
He wants his arm back, ergo everyone has to die.
Yeah. Oh, I don't have an arm. You're all lizards now. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Motivation. Let's figure this out. He doesn't have an arm. Wants to solve that. And then the thing that gives him his arm makes him crazy. And then he wants to kill everybody. That's it.
Okay. And then there's the Dr. Rajit or whatever.
Yeah. Look, stop bringing facts into this, James.
Yeah. Like that was a thing. When you think about the lizard and his motivation, that doesn't come up, but that was a big part of it.
And then he disappears.
He was going to go and test it on some veterans because Dr. Connors wasn't willing to use it on himself.
Yeah.
So in order to prevent him from using it on veterans, he does use it on himself, but doesn't tell anyone.
Yep.
And then chases that doctor down, and then that doctor disappears.
Yeah. Apparently there was another scene with him that got cut. But yeah, as it stands, it makes no sense. he's just gone.
Yeah, it's really sloppy. And then he's going to infect everybody. And then Spidey's going to reverse it, which should reverse it on Spidey because he went through the same process, I believe.
I don't think it's exactly the same because they come up with the equation that after he becomes Spider-Man. So I think it's different slightly. Yeah.
Okay, you're right. This all makes sense now.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect sense. But you know it still doesn't make sense? Why people are not using Google as their search engine. We've got this lizard stuff out of the way. Somebody explain to me why he's using Bing.
Makes no sense.
Oh, God. All right. So let's talk about Dennis Leary. How did you feel about Dennis Leary in this movie?
It was good. I'm a Dennis Leary fan. I wanted a bit better. He's a little too straight-laced and not funny to me.
He had his moments. Like, that hallway scene with Emma Stone, I thought it was funny. But he just didn't get a lot of opportunity to flex his comedy muscles. But
no. And I guess he wasn't supposed to be that much of a comic character. And I don't begrudge funny people for not wanting to be goofballs all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, he's always sort of done a really good job of straddling the line between drama and comedy. Like, as far back as the 90s, he's sort of done that very well. Like, early 90s. But, I would have liked a couple more jokes, but the mayor of Tokyo is kind of a nice little jab to throw in there, which is apparently, I read, was improvised. And
That was funny.
Yeah. And I really liked it. I do like Dennis Leary, but I really liked him in this movie. And I would have loved more Emma Stone and Dennis Leary scenes, not just because I'm a fan of both of them, as much as just I feel like it would have been good for the movie and particularly for the sequel as she's dealing with her father's death.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish that he was a police captain in New York, but was dressed like a Boston firefighter at all times.
Well, his Rescue Me was New York firefighters.
No, I know, but he's still Boston to me.
Oh, okay, so fair enough.
That has to be the way it is. Mm. Does any of the action in this movie work for you?
Yeah. Specifically, I like the way Spider-Man swings in this movie.
Okay.
I can't totally. I mean, you're more the one to think about the physics of these things than I do, but it just sort of felt more correct the way he swung around. I like that he did a lot of horizontal moves, like when he was sliding around on the ground between the lizard's legs and stuff like that. I thought that was really clever and cool. I mean, I haven't seen the other Spider-Mans in a while, so I don't remember if they did that in those. I assume they did at some point. But just, and how often he used his webbing, I thought was really good. As far as like when he's in an actual fight, because like, that's his big advantage. Those are the projectiles that he has. And I thought it was really cool that he used that. And just the way he was swinging, like he seemed to swing, like actually shoot webs to swing on as little as possible, which seems logical to me, in that it seems like it would be really hard to hit things with the precision you need to hit hit them with to swing around the city, you know?
Yeah.
So it seems logical that you would milk the swinging, like each web that he hits, you know?
Yeah. And when you think of the, like Spider-Man cartoons, when he's just, you know, monologuing to himself, looking where he's swinging and just shooting up in the air, and it always works perfectly.
Just swinging in the sky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Out in a field somewhere.
Yeah, I'm out in Tulsa, Oklahoma. How am I going to get back to Manhattan? Oh, I'll swing.
Yeah, no, I was reading about how they worked like really hard on the swinging and stuff, and studied gymnasts. And yes, I did read into more of the boring stuff about, you know, zero and negative gravity and momentum and accelerating at the bottom of your swing and then decelerating on the way up and down and stuff. So the physics seems to make more sense than.
So when I'm playing the video game for this movie, I should hold R while I'm swinging to build up speed? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, keep that. That's exactly it.
Okay.
Man, Spider-Man video games are fun.
When they're good, they're fun. When they're bad, they're so disappointing.
He's just one of those ones, and purely because of the webbing, but it totally works for video games.
Yeah, absolutely.
this movie didn't really have. And I was like, just comparing it to the first Spider-Man, which we've been doing, and I think a lot of people are doing.
Which is logical, yeah.
Yeah, and everyone would anyway, because it's the first of the because it's the origin story. But as we've said, it's such a rehash of that movie that there's going to be a lot of comparisons.
Mm-hmm.
This one didn't really have any of the epic, iconic moments or shots or feeling of the first one. Did you find that?
How do you mean? Like examples? What are examples from the first one?
The upside down kiss in the rain.
Yep,
that's like a big iconic moment, and seems to be part of like the Spider-Man mythology now, despite it being pretty recent.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
some people didn't like this, but him, you know, up by the American flag at the end.
Mm-hmm.
There's just kind of epic, more grand nature to the first one I found than this one.
Yeah. I think the point about that kiss being iconic, I think is absolutely true. I think a big part of why there's nothing iconic in this movie, one, I don't think there is a moment that will become iconic in this movie, but also we're dealing with this movie that's been out for a week. It hasn't had a chance to be parodied in pop culture, which is generally when things become iconic, is when they become so big that you can't avoid them, like the Matrix jump, you know?
Yeah.
Or the bullet time stuff in the Matrix. And
yeah.
And also just the way culture works now, there are more blockbusters than there were 10 years ago. So, I mean, there's also that. There's more of a diluted playing field for these things. But there's nothing in this movie that I really thought was particularly like. But I mean, I guess the first time I saw the first Spider-Man movie, I wasn't watching that upside down kiss being like, that'll be on the MTV Movie Awards. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just feel like they used it in the advertisements a lot. And yeah, I mean, it definitely takes time for moments like that to become iconic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I doubt watching any movie now the first time, you know, you understand what is going to become of these moments.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That's definitely right. But I can't see any of these moments having any of the kind of gravitas that kind of shot did. I mean, what's a big iconic movie moment from this movie? I think it's hard pressed for a lot of people to come up with it, even their first kiss.
I think it's the part where the lizard talks. I think that's the part.
Yeah. 50-way tie for every shot of the lizard. Yeah, I don't know. I think there was something more epic about the first one. And I think this one, you know, doing kind of the more personal stuff between them. And I think that that was leaned on heavily. And I think it's the stuff that works the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that takes away from kind of the big, spectacular, epic nature of the movie.
Okay.
And that doesn't mean I don't think that means it's a worse movie. And I think maybe that speaks to kind of the believable everyday nature of the things that they did right being sort of, you know, grounded and not realistic, but, you know, believable.
Yeah. 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 Yes, I agree. And they definitely did focus more on Peter Parker, and they did a better job of dealing with the Peter Parker stuff as well. Yeah. Something that sort of like popped into my head as I was watching this movie that I don't know how I never thought of it, but maybe it's just because like I've enjoyed Spider-Man since I was so young. I never clued into the fact that like Uncle Ben and Aunt May were not his grandparents because they've always been so old that I just like how old were his parents when he had him in like the previous movie series, you know, like they must have been like 55 to 60, you know, like because Rosemary Harris, I think that was her name that played Aunt May in the old movies, is so old as shit. And then, like, Sally Field, you know, not a spring chicken anymore. She's not Norma Rae these days. But, you know, she's a logical age to be the aunt of a guy that's 17, you know? So.
Yeah,
that,
no.
I just thought it was funny that his aunt and uncle have always been so old that I just assumed they were his grandparents, even though they are repeatedly called by their parental role. Or, sorry, familial role.
Yeah. Unless, like, what's Peter's dad's name, Robert or Richard?
Richard, I think.
Richard Parker. Yeah. Unless Richard is, you know, Ben's older brother by like 35 years, then yeah, something's off in the math.
But Peter's dad did look pretty old in this movie too.
That's true.
Yeah, but yeah. I guess my theory isn't as strong because Sally Field is 65, and I'm sure Martin Sheen's older than that. Yeah, Ed. 71. So, but whatever.
Did you like those two though?
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, Sally Field didn't have a lot to do, but she always gives off the aura of feistiness, which I like.
Yeah.
I mean, that could just be Norma Rae still, but you know, she seems like someone that would fight for the you know, person she is taken care of, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought Martin Sheen played like a perfectly Martin Sheen-y character, so.
Yeah. Does Aunt May know Peter Spidey in this?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
When he's reaching in the bag for those eggs, she doesn't kind of expect a Spider-Man costume?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that she will know soon, given Peter's penchant for telling people, but...
Peter's misunderstanding of how secret identities work.
He's still
a phone's ringing. Better take my mask off.
I did love when the phone rang when he was Spider-Man.
Yeah, I like that. That was another thing that added to the...
And him talking to Gwen towards the end on a cell phone. And he's like, get out of there. And you mother... Or whatever he says. But it's so funny how angry he is just having this cell phone conversation on the street dressed as Spider-Man.
I think it's Mother Hubbard.
Yeah, something like that. It's
like, is it Spidey 2 when he's caught in the elevator with somebody at the start?
Yeah, pizza delivery guy or something, I think.
Yeah.
Or no.
No, because he's pizza delivery guy
at
the start.
I don't know. I can't remember. But
that's okay. Yeah. It's not important right now.
No.
Actually, speaking of Spider-Man 2.
Okay.
I remember someone saying that Spider-Man... Well, a lot of people have said Spider-Man 2 is the best Spider-Man so far.
Yes, I think that's the consensus.
Yeah. But I remember someone saying Spider-Man 2 is a very good movie, but not a good Spider-Man movie.
I can buy that.
Because it's too dark?
No. It's not too dark. I think...
Too gritty?
That podcast doesn't run until next week. They don't know the anger we have for... I guess specifically I have for those terms. I don't know. I don't... And again, it's been years and years since I watched Spider-Man 2, but I think it was adequately Spider-Man-y. Maybe the idea of him not wanting to be Spider-Man, maybe. Because that's sort of the crux of the Spider-Man arc in that movie, and then a lot of it deals with Doc Ock. And yeah. it's very much sort of the father figure thing, as most villains are, or most Spider-Man villains are, and then also Spider-Man not wanting to be Spider-Man anymore. So, I don't know.
Okay. It's not that it's too dark for you?
No.
Okay.
Nor gritty.
No gritty. Yeah. No, I wasn't going to say that again. Yeah. Because I think Spider-Man, I don't know, do people want Spider-Man to be light? Like, is he, can you not go too dark with Spider-Man? And I know I'm saying dark again, but I mean, the costume on this one was a little bit darker than usual. And I think, I don't know, I think people like the bright, fun Spider-Man. I mean, things have to get, you know, violent and scary at points, but is Spider-Man kind of one of those younger, you know, a bit lighter, funner villains, in characters?
Yeah, he's more fun because he, like, cracks jokes and stuff. You know, he's a young person, which just leads to somebody being more fun. Yeah. I think that's a big part of it, is that people see him as a teenager, and it's just sort of like, well, we can't take him seriously. He's a teenager. I think yeah. that's a huge part of the way Spider-Man is projected in culture. And I think that's what one of the, you know, some of the key things that Spider-Man has been messed up to me. It's just that I always felt like, and this is the reason I always liked Spider-Man a lot as a kid and growing up, and continue to like the character despite the fact that I've been mostly disappointed with the movies, is that, like, he's the superhero that reminds me of myself. You know, he's sort of like, he's nerdy-ish, but he's sort of confident in his nerdiness. I suppose, you know, less in the older comics and the Raimi Spider-Man movies. Yeah. But he's still, he's identifiable to comic book fans specifically. And one of the things that Marvel did back when Spider-Man, you know, became a notable comics character in the 60s was they would always tie in these very sort of like social concerns with them, with their characters. Like, they mostly ended up being related to science, which Peter was, but there was also sort of the class issues in Spider-Man, given that the Parkers aren't rich. Like, they don't have a lot of money, and they're constantly dealing with money troubles. Yeah. And I thought that was something that I would have loved this movie to do more of, even though it doesn't look like the Parkers are poor. They do look movie poor. Like, their house is small yeah. for a movie. Whereas Gwen Stacy lives downtown Manhattan in this, like, lavish apartment that's gigantic. And with
81st Street.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know New York.
West 81st, like, they use the exterior of their apartment, like, when they show their apartment building from outside, mm-hmm. is the street that Jerry Seinfeld lived on.
Oh, okay.
In Seinfeld.
Okay. So yeah, either way, like, you know, everybody knows the property in New York is not cheap, let alone property that has enough room for a teenage girl and four younger boys and two parents, you know?
Yeah.
So clearly Gwen Stacy is rich and Peter Parker isn't, and they didn't touch on that at all. And I would have enjoyed at least some sort of tension there.
Yeah.
And again, one of the many things this movie touches on, and, well, I mean, it doesn't even touch on that, but just doesn't fully develop, that would have been interesting.
Yeah.
So,
do you know, I have a theory about why Spidey is kind of seen as the best stand-in for, like, the teen superhero, kind of the younger, you know, relatable character for people.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of superheroes, especially ones that get their powers at one point, like, you know, not like Batman, who it kind of develops and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, like a Spider-Man who instantly gets it, or, you know, any of those other characters. A lot of those, I think there's kind of the metaphor for hitting puberty, like becoming powerful, but also having to accept these responsibilities and dealing with massive changes in your life. And
yeah, that was a huge part of the first Raimi Spider-Man, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Given that his webbing was basically a wet dream.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Spidey is the best, you know, metaphor, because he's got shooting web.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the most easy visual metaphor of yeah. anybody's superpowers to, you know, symbolize something of maturity like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's always been, you know, he does grow up and go to college and, you know, after that and get jobs and stuff like that. But I still think people always want a teen Spider-Man, or at least to start there.
Yeah, I hope they do another movie in high school. Definitely. I hope the sequel takes place exclusively in high school. and I don't mean that because I like teen movies. I just think there's just a lot of unmined potential there. And I feel like if they go right to college, it'll be too early. You know, like maybe have it. I don't know, because they're 17 in the movie. I don't know if that means it's their senior year or second to last. But I would like the next movie to just exist in high school and maybe go to university in the next, or college or whatever in the next one. But yeah, no, I know there will be a sequel, of course. And Mark, I refuse to believe that Mark Webb doesn't see the flaws in this movie, just because he's a smart person, having directed 500 Days of Summer, which is one of my favorite movies the past 5 years. Like, he can't possibly be dumb enough to think that some of the things in this movie are not rushed and poor. And given that this is the second movie he's directed, certainly the first, the budget for this movie is $250 million.
Yeah.
And like, what was the budget of 500 Days of Summer? I'm going to look it up real quick.
I think it's 4 or 5.
7.5 million.
Yeah.
You know, like, what percentage jump is that? You know? And I just feel like, I mean, we see the jump that most big movie directors have from the first to second movie they direct. The action in Spider-Man 2 is so much better than the action in Spider-Man 1, and just it's a more cohesive movie. You can say the same thing about the X-Men series. You can say the same thing about the Batman series, you know. But yeah, he will direct the next sequel because he's always said he wants to, and it's a big enough hit that he'll get a chance. I'm confident the sequel will be a good movie. I'm sad this one wasn't a good movie.
Yeah, and do you think he was trying to play into a genre that he's not used to and maybe isn't necessarily his favorite, and kind of said, oh, I'll do this even though I don't like these kinds of choices, I have to play to, you know, this broad base?
No, not necessarily. I feel like he
just tried his best and missed.
He very much wanted to make this movie, and I think, like, because there are clearly good ideas there. Again, as I said probably 8 times now, there are too many good ideas,
yeah,
none of which are properly fully developed. And, I mean, just looking at the list of writers on this movie, there were 5 writers credited on the IMDb page. I mean, a couple of those might just be Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, but still, let's maybe have sort of one idea the next one, and then we'll see where that goes. Let's not try and jam everything into a movie. I understand the idea behind trying to make a blockbuster that has ideas behind it, because I love that we're in an age where that has to happen. You know,
yeah,
you can't just make shit blow up for 2 hours and it's acceptable as a good summer entertainment anymore. Like that. But yeah, I think there's a line where you have to be like, no, we can't do that yet, or we can't do that in this movie because that takes away from all this other stuff. Unless there's a 3-hour cut of this movie in which everything I loved about it is fully developed, you know, which I doubt, but I'm sure there's a longer version of this movie out there.
Yeah, I think it just had a lot of cutting. And yeah, as you said, too many cooks in the kitchen, like too many people writing it off the get-go. And then I think cut up a whole lot. And yeah, I've just heard a lot of the plot holes and stuff and a lot of things people find underdeveloped. I keep hearing, oh, there was a scene that wrapped that up, or...
Yeah, that's not an excuse to me. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
No, I know what you mean.
Like, I know, just saying, yeah, we acknowledge this problem, but we have the materials to fix it, but we didn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, I have cancer. Yeah, we have a medicine. We don't sell it.
All right, took it to an extreme there. But...
how'd you like the post-credit scene that blew you away?
Yeah, you can keep that. What, like, there was no other than, like, because everybody knows now that you're gonna make a sequel to this movie if it is a hit, and the audience that is already there is gonna be bought into it, unless it's this great scene that's gonna sell people that weren't already sold on it, you know, like, what it did nothing. It was just like, oh, we still have unresolved things. Yeah, of course we do. Gwen and Pete aren't together, and maybe they will be, maybe they won't be. He said some things that are maybe immoral about his promise to Captain Stacy. But, you know, like, that's what... I was upset, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, it just seemed like they didn't even know what they wanted to do with this
scene. It's just like, we need to let them know there's probably going to be a sequel if this makes money.
Who's the man in the shadows? Tell us.
It's actor Michael... Actor yeah. Michael Massey is the man in the shadows. He was a villain early on in 24. He's in a lot of other things. He's in Catwoman as well. So, yeah. Yeah, just one other quick thing that doesn't totally... oh, yeah, he's the guy that accidentally killed Brandon Lee, by the way.
Is he really?
Yeah. I said accidentally. Anyways, yeah, I was watching Catwoman the other day. Pardon?
As you're wont to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, I heard a How Did This Get Made podcast about it, which, by the way, is a hilarious podcast, and everybody should check it out. That was really funny, and I was like, I'm going to rewatch this movie and see if it was right. Yeah, it's hilarious. But also, the structure is exactly like Batman Begins, but if every wrong decision was made. Like, the whole structure of the movie, as far as the writing, is basically the same. And then it's just like, all of the dialogue is awful, and everything is just wrong. Everything that happens, you're like, what? Why? Why would this happen? Why would this ever happen? And then I was just sort of like wondering like how terrible the world would be if Catwoman and Batman Begins had flopped. Like, or sorry, flip-flopped. You know, like Catwoman is this big hit that spawns like the second biggest movie of all time with its sequel. And then Batman Begins is just this terrible flop that everybody jokes about. You know, like, it's just not a world I want to live in, because there were just such similar movies with just, it was very odd to me. I highly recommend you watch Catwoman at some point, because it is illogical. Also, it has a basketball scene. but nobody ever takes a shot in the basketball scene. It's really funny.
I like to think in that alternate universe, Catwoman 2's villain is the lizard from this movie.
Oh shit. There it is. We got it. So yeah, is that all you got?
Yeah, we didn't talk about alternate casting, which I think you said you wanted to.
I didn't really want to, but I mean specifically want to. I'm up for talking about it. You want to talk about it? Let's talk about it.
Okay. My choice for Spider-Man.
Are you going to say Michael Angranano or whatever?
No, I'm not.
You seem to love that guy.
No, it's Jesse Eisenberg.
Mini Woody Allen plays Spider-Man.
Not because he was also in The Social Network. Yeah.
We're not trying to plug our video podcast that's currently up on themcguffinman.com.
No, I love Jesse Eisenberg, and he can play a good nerd, and he can do no wrong to
me. Oh my god, that would have been so fun. That would have been Woody Allen as Spider-Man. How funny would that have been?
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I saw Michael Cera's name in the mix for people being considered, and that I do not approve of.
Yeah. There are so many people that just like, what? That makes no sense. But
yeah. Oh, fake Christian Slater from 310 to Yuma.
I know, Logan Lerman. Yeah. Well, if you can play Christian Slater, I'm sure you can play Spider-Man.
Who else do you like, not like?
I can't remember the whole list. I only said that because I saw Savages today, and Aaron Johnson was in that. Yeah. And he was one of the guys on the short list for Spider-Man, and it just would have been a terrible decision to cast him. Because he's not a very good actor, and he also walks with way too much confidence. So, I don't know.
You know what I noticed about Savages?
What?
Me booing the whole time.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Why did you see Savages?
Because it was at the drive-in.
Oh my god.
That was bad.
It wasn't very good, but I thought it was awesomely ludicrous.
I didn't like it.
Benicio, obviously.
I know.
The scene with Benicio and John Travolta was so funny to me.
I know, and that's... Yeah, just wasted potential for that whole movie.
No, that movie never had potential.
Yeah, that was a good trailer.
Did it? I was like, this movie's gonna suck, but I am gonna love parts of it so much. And I was exactly correct.
So that's our podcast on Savages.
Yeah, basically. glad we could get a twofer in this episode. But yeah, I'm gonna bring in Travis now, but James and I will be back later this week. Actually, we're gonna put out another podcast on Thursday about The Conversation and Enemy of the State. As well as talk about surveillance stuff.
Those are good movies, by the way.
Yeah, and you'll find out plenty about our thoughts on them on Thursday. So, yeah, be sure to check back, and now I'll just get Travis in here. So welcome to the government, Travis.
Hi, thank you for having me again.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. So you saw the Amazing Spider-Man.
I did, yeah. I went on Saturday night in my hometown theater, and there were not a lot of people there.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, from what I understand, you have a bunch of questions.
I wouldn't call it a bunch, but I'm curious, like, what did you think about it just overall as a film?
Oh, man, it was so much worse than I thought it was going to be. I genuinely did not like it. Like when I came out of Prometheus, uh-huh. I thought there was a lot of stuff I hated about it, but I wasn't sure overall if I enjoyed it or not. This was not a good movie. Okay. I cannot think of a lot of redeeming. There are redeeming factors, but it was kind of a flawed premise to begin with, I think.
How so?
It seemed like they were really desperate for it to be a new hip Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and to really like to make it new and try to make it indistinguishable from these other movies. And it ended up just kind of not exactly being a new idea, but not exactly being like, they didn't take like chances with it. There wasn't some wild new take on Spider-Man. It was just kind of like newer looking.
Yeah.
The cast was good. The pacing was weird. The script was weird. There were a bunch of ideas that got kind of abandoned halfway through.
Yeah.
I think it'll make a really, like, there'll be a great sequel, I'm sure, but there was no hook for it. There was nothing other than it's Spider-Man and it's new. There was literally nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if they had taken the angle with his parents a little further and actually made a whole movie about that, mm-hmm. that would have been interesting, and I really thought that was what they were going to do. Or if they've just made it like a straight up teen romantic comedy, mm-hmm. and fine,
yeah,
because that was the strength. Those were both things that I think were good about it, but they were kind of not. He didn't really carry through. The director, or whoever wrote it, didn't really seem to carry through on any of those things.
Yeah, I basically agree. I got really excited in the first 10 minutes, like the first scene in their high school, when I'm like, oh my god, is this going to be a teen movie? And then was at times, but...
The lizard attack in the high school was kind of cool. I thought that was kind of a neat moment.
I like that scene for sure.
The villain's motivations, I mean, there were interesting seeds there, but... Like, I like the idea that he was being coerced into doing this work, but then about halfway through, I'm, like, not really sure if he... Is it because he wants his arm back? We don't meet, like, he doesn't have a wife. He mm-hmm. doesn't have a family. We don't know anything about him. Mm-hmm. I mean, I filled in the backstory with his character from the five-year engagement. I imagine that after...
I know, like, evil-ish kind of science or academic person.
I imagine that after Emily Blunt broke it off with him, he just cut off his arm out of anger. And he's played scientist in the last two movies, but they don't make him cut his fucking hair.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the hair of rebellious science.
And the mutton chops of rebellious science as well.
Exactly.
What else happened with it?
I'm curious to know how you feel about this idea. Given how many like superhero movies you've had to deal with now,
I think that it's changed from have the opportunity to see to have to deal with.
Well, okay. I don't mean it as have to deal with, because I was excited to see Spider-Man and
I was
happy to, you know.
Yeah.
But like, I am just so tired of villains that feel thrown in. Like, I feel like this movie would have been so much better if the lizard didn't exist at all. And it's just Spider-Man learning how to crime fight effectively. Like, just normal people with guns.
He didn't really seem to have to try very hard to earn the favor of the construction union.
No.
he had to take out two muggers, and then they were like, all right, we're going to risk all getting fired.
No, it's because he saved the kid. That's why.
That kid was the worst, too. It's like, come on, kid, reach up your hand. And the kid was like, no, I'm going to play with this mask for like 10 minutes as this car is plummeting into the river. It was, oh my god. It looked cool. Like, it was, I think he looks like Spider-Man in the costume, and they gave away all of his like quippy lines in the trailer. Like, yeah. I was expecting him to be livelier, but he didn't really do much the rest of the time. Like, there were some neat visuals, and I was like, okay, this was probably a really cool concept drawing. Mm-hmm. Like, when he's going into the sewer and he shoots out all the different webs, that was kind of cool.
I thought that was super cool.
But it didn't go anywhere. Like, he gets in a fist fight with the lizard, and then that's kind of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there was no meaning to that at all in the larger plot. Like, that didn't drive anything forward. I want to know, do you leave your PowerPoint presentations running when you leave your office?
Obviously. Doesn't everybody?
He didn't even have to click anything. It was just starting. All right, here's my plan, whoever's broken into my lair.
Is that the... is this in the sewer lair or is this in the Oscorp building? I don't remember.
This is the sewer lair after he's become a serum junkie.
Yeah. Well, yeah, now he's a junkie. He doesn't remember things
There's a line on the Venture Brothers cartoon where somebody at some point screams, "He's hopped up on serum!" And that's all I could think of. Oh, yeah, so he turns 10 cops who are presumably stronger than one-armed Rush Eye fans, or Dr. Connors.
Yeah.
He turns them into lizards. And you don't see them again until the antidote comes, like, hours later. You don't see them.
I was like,
we're going to get to see 10 lizard cops trash a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
No.
It's a very slow-acting serum.
Oh, man. And when he was swinging to...
When it's inhaled and not injected, I mean, it takes way, way longer.
Yeah, and they go into a sleeping coma for, I don't know, an hour.
For however long it takes to have a battle on top of the Oscorp building.
Oh, man. I did kind of like that the hero was Dennis Leary with a shotgun. I was hoping that he would succeed to the degree that it was just like, I wanted the climax of the movie to just be him shooting the lizard and then he died. Like, I wanted Dennis Leary to succeed really badly because I thought that would have been a really unique ending.
Yeah, absolutely. It would have been pretty great. Now, just from like a comics perspective, how do you feel? Like, where do you think they took from comics? Where do you think maybe they could have used more inspiration from? Stuff like that.
Honestly, I really wanted it to be Ultimate Spider-Man, which I gave the you to read, and I mean, after seeing the trailers, it was kind of like I thought that was what the angle they were going to go with it. I don't know. I thought there was going to be more. Like, everything being connected to Oscorp is kind of like, okay, well, everything is connected to Luther Corp in the Superman universe. Yeah. Like, just kind of a gimme. There's not a specific thing that that's drawing from. Him spending time with his skateboard instead of learning about his spider powers, I don't know where that's from. Gwen Stacy.
It's from the early 2000s. That's what that scene is from.
Yeah.
When Tony Hawk Pro Skater was the coolest shit ever.
Yeah. If I had spider powers, do you think I would be at home, like, doing scales on my guitar? No. No, I wouldn't. I would be out.
It's that the spider powers made him such a better skateboarder. You know what I mean? That's why he was doing a skateboarding thing.
They'll probably wear off quickly, so I better use it to enjoy skateboarding.
I better work on my double kickflip.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and he seemed to not have any confidence issues at the beginning of the movie. Like, he was a little awkward, and so his parents were... He never knew his parents, so I didn't feel like he had it that hard up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. If they had pushed the abandonment issues thing a little bit more, because, like, Spider-Man is all about, at least in the other movies, and I think a lot in the comics is about these abandonment issues and looking for substitute fathers and... not being able to see a mad scientist when it's right in front of him. And that was the other thing. Is like, there was no, I don't understand the arc of Dr. Connors. Like,
no,
if you watch the second one with, Dr. Octopus,
the second one in the previous series, Travis, is no second one to the Spider-Man.
If you watch Sam Raimi Presents Spider-Man 2, there's like a half hour where they have dinner together and it's just this really like muted, character moment, and there was none of that in this one.
And we have to see that he has a wife, which we never see Dr. Connors with another person. You know, like,
never.
His home is the emptiest home. Like, he's just not a person. I read that there were actually like a wife and a kid cast that were either cut out of the movie or cut out before they started shooting.
That's the draw in the not the draw, but that's kind of the character's hook in the comics, is that he does have a family and he's got these things going on. So I don't know. And I just didn't quite understand. I had one of your roommates actually tell me that I should probably judge it on its own merits.
Well, yeah.
But I also don't think that I would make a movie that was exactly Inception but slightly newer and then tell people that they have to judge it on its own. Like, it wasn't a new idea. It wasn't really a new take. It was kind of muddled. I didn't get it.
Yeah. I generally agree.
Yeah.
But so how do you feel about the idea of a sequel with the same director?
I read a thing that said that it would be better if he got a better, and you know more about this than I do, if he got a better second unit director or learned how to pace action sequences.
I never can tell what is necessarily shot on second unit and what isn't. I mean, generally, I would guess things not involving the stars, but a better action direction would be good, but I don't think the action direction was terrible. I feel like the pacing of the movie was terrible.
Yeah. It took him forever to get to when he was like shot in the leg, and it took him forever to get to the tower.
Mm.
I was just kind of bored at that point. Okay. I wasn't rooting for him at that. I wasn't rooting against him, but I just kind of wanted to go home.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. You do sound kind of exasperated for this whole
thing. It wasn't the worst thing ever, but it certainly was a movie made to keep the rights.
Yeah. Fair enough. So I'm hopeful for a sequel, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, if they had a really clear idea of a really interesting villain, or if they made it less about a villain, if he had some sort of struggle, if they made Sally Field's Aunt May an actual character, just all this stuff that was really good about the other ones was not here, and this didn't have enough to offer that was new,
yeah,
that I did like, yeah, for me to like it overall. So
yeah, that's fair.
2 stars out of 20.
2 stars out of 20.
Sorry, 25 out of 25 stars.
Okay, fair enough. Well, thank you for joining us on the MacGuffin Men, Travis.
No problem.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. We're going to have another podcast coming out this week about the conversation and Enemy of the State and surveillance technologies. It's, I don't know, we get a little political, I suppose. Next week we'll be putting out a podcast on Batman Begins in the Dark Knight and a video podcast on Inception. And Travis, we'll have you back in a couple of weeks when we talk about The Dark Knight Rises. If that's
sure.
Okay with you.
Yeah, I'm watching Batman Begins tonight.
Sweet. You're making smart choices. So thanks again, listeners, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com, or follow us on Twitter @themacguffinmen.